Randy. Forgot the third switch. That's why the volume level was way too low. See, I need you guys. Otherwise, we might not even get on the air. So let's start out. Let's start out this here Friday, the 16th of January, 2015, with one of those for attentive listeners who can remind me when I haven't thrown the third switch. Yeah, yeah. No one to blame but myself. And I am actually pretty good at that. So, you know, hey, maybe we've gotten all the screw-ups out of the way there. Again, thank you, Randy. Thank you very much. Hey, this is The Horn. Head on. I get to say it again. It's so wonderful. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go, for instance, if you would perhaps like to join us in the chat room. That's where News Ninja Carol Baker is, and Carol Abel and Gerald, and both manifestations of the indefatigable, inveterate, veteran chat room moderator, Sparky. He is a bit of a, I guess he can fold space like a third stage guild navigator, because Man Cave and Sparky are in the room. Good evening, Stock and Larry. Good evening, Texas T. Good evening, Mr. Gibson. And many more to join us in fairly short order, I hope. It is, in fact, Friday on the front porch. Wow, cool. That's excellent. Carol Baker pointing out, I'm trying out TuneIn. I like it. Coming in loud and clear. Yeah, isn't it nice? And someday we're going to have our very own horn app. That's one of our goals for the coming year. Whether we need it or not, well, that remains to be seen, doesn't it? Let's see. It is, yes, indeed, Friday on the front porch. And we... I got a feeling it's going to be a busy evening. We'll catch up with... We'll catch up with some... stuff that maybe we didn't get to earlier in the week. Talk about some stuff that's on the radar. Still looking for that Je suis Baga hashtag. Not just a hell of a lot of coverage coming out of Nigeria. No, and this marks a week now that we've been waiting for it. Oh, by the way, yeah, I almost forgot. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I like to say I'm Bob Kincaid. I like to say Bob Kincaid a lot. BobKincaid@gmail.com, BobKincaid at gmail.com, at Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid on Twitter, Bob Kincaid on Facebook, and Bob Kincaid Horn for Skype purposes. Alrighty, yeah. This is, as noted, Friday on the front porch. We will be starting the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in short order, I have no doubt. Yeah, I don't know, Carol Baker. Can anyone tell me the name of the host? I don't know Bob Kincaid, I don't know. Because I like to say Bob Kincaid a lot. Yeah. Let's see. Having the website back means, of course, that you've got the Listen Live player back. It also means you've got easy access to the archives of the programs, and that's all back. And yes, because it has been a brutal, and I do mean brutal, couple of days, it means we've got the PayPal interface back. Yay! Indeed. And, yes, Randy, I did date the program already. I forgot already. No worries, Randy, no worries. I do want to thank those who have made it possible for this week not to be nearly as brutal as it otherwise could have been. Thank you very kindly to the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansastan, who sends a note saying, have a half a show on me. I challenge the Horn listeners to fund the other half. I especially welcome $5 and $10 contributions. Thank you. Thank you very much, Diane. And thank you very kindly to Barry. Barry helped out as well. It is very much appreciated. Thank you to Chris, who says, keep on fighting. Thank you. And with all of that, what that means is that we only have, well, the evening's fundraising goal, which Diane just issued a challenge on. We've also got a challenge out there, a middle-of-the-month challenge from our good friend Tom in the Bay Area, who issued that last night, but that was before the PayPal interface got back up and running. So that means there's about $175 worth of challenge on the table, and if all of that gets met, then we will be okay for the end of the week. Yay. Because it's been a booger. Thank you, one and all. Now, of course, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. For those of you who would like to mail it in, the address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. With the gentle reminder that neither checks nor money orders should be made payable to Bob Kincaid. That's the one place where Bob Kincaid is not helpful, but made payable instead to The Horn. Had a lovely snack this afternoon. A box arrived, a mysterious box arrived from Hooterville. And in it was a package of Cajun cheese curds produced by the Ellsworth Creamery, the cheese curd capital of the world in Ellsworth, Wisconsin. I've been there. It's a magical place. It's a sort of lipid lactose dairy, dairy Disneyland. Yum, yum. And during these cold and brutal winter months, I should note, they ship. Try them sometime. Just look for Ellsworth Creamery online. That is an unpaid advertisement, by the way. You know what? We ought to come up with a page for the website. Maybe I will. With links to all these places that we love so well that has such either really good products or, well, and food includes products. Places like Ellsworth Creamery and Binkert's, Binkert's.com. Your one-stop shop for awesome, classic German brats and bratzens and debretzinas and, yeah, yummy. Maybe put a link to the Stormy Cromer company there, the warmest hat in the world. It's not like they're going to pay us or anything, but hey, it's not always about that now, is it? So where do we start with this Friday on the front porch? Yeah. Lots of options. And, you know, we kind of, and by the way, I got to do this every Friday evening. I am sure that Sparky is by now putting out the bat signal and laying down the breadcrumb trail, because starting in about 51 minutes here, we will have our weekly Friday end of the week extraordinary ordinary roundtable beginning. We do that via the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, of which Sparky is the longtime moderator and, in fact, originator. If you would like to participate in the extraordinary ordinary Friday on the front porch roundtable, it is quite easy to do. You merely sign into your own Skype account. And then you send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunc. And he'll get you into the mix of the conversation. And hopefully, well, it's a good time every time we try it. And that's coming up in about 50 minutes. Stuff to get started with. Part of Friday is always a matter of catching up with stuff that has not quite made the cut during the week. In particular, in this case, something that didn't make the Wednesday cut. We have to go down to Tennessee, Stan, for this one. A little community called Cordova, Tennessee, C-O-R-D-O-V-A, and a report, and this is sort of a double-barreled story, if you will, because the report comes originated by, wait a minute,
Memphis Action News 5 team live coverage.
Okay.
Memphis Action News 5 News Center live team coverage.
Yeah. And it's the story of a woman by the name of Robin Wilkins. Robin Wilkins, and that's Robin with a Y, just happened to be stuck in traffic one day there in Cordova, Tennessee. And she was stuck in traffic behind a big old yeller school bus. And that's when she realized she was in the presence of Satan. Yes. Yes, right there in traffic in Cordova, Tennessee. And not only was she in the presence of Satan had boarded the school bus, and the school bus had become demon-possessed. Yes. Now, we all know from previous stories that things like fuzzy sweaters from the consignment shop can have demons in them. Pat Robertson done told us so. And Pat Robertson would never lie. Satan moves in mysterious and enigmatic forms. But fortunately, Robin Wilkins of Cordova, Tennessee had received the gift of demonic perception from the Holy Spirit. And sitting right there in front of her on that yeller school bus, she knew she was a-looking at the devil. How? No, there wasn't some mean-spirited little adolescent in the back of the school bus going, at Robin Wilkins. It was the lights. Remember, one of the names of the devil is Lucifer. Lucifer. Yeah. Luke's, L-U-X, coming from Latin, meaning light, and the ifer part being rooted in the Latin verb facio, facere. No dirty jokes now. Quit it. It's too early in the program. Facio, facere, faci, factum, which means to do or to make, you know, like in fabricate. The maker of light, the light maker, Lucifer, the devil. And there he was in the taillights of the bus. Because you see, brethren and sistren, while many of us see LED lights as nothing more than a means of reducing consumption of largely hydrocarbon-fueled electricity, or in this case, the electricity load generally on a big old yeller Tennessee Stand school bus, because they're very bright, and they don't, and light-emitting diodes don't use nearly the electrical load, even coming off, say, a bus's alternator, as do incandescent lights, and they're easier to see. But lo and behold, these two round lights to either side of, oh my God, he gets around the emergency escape door for our precious little Christian children! Those two round lights bore inside them because she done took to photograph, because she figured out how to work the camera on her telephone. The lights by either side of the emergency door are in the shape of a 5-pointed star.
And everybody knows that the pentacle, the pentagram of power, is the means by which Satan and his many demons, Ashtamgaloth Graham Black, that's one of them. He's hell on an autograph. It's hard enough just asking him for one. But then again, you get possessed when you do, so, right. But that pentacle of power is what the witches use to ensnare our precious little children. And Robin Wilkins was not a-gonna take it lying down, them pentagrams of satanic power right there on our yeller school buses in Cordova, Tennessee. And they wasn't just any pentagrams. They was upside-down pentagrams. Now, to me, it looks like they're a little bit obliquely off-center, but she had the Holy Spirit gift of perception, and she could tell otherwise, and she was the one who was there after all. And she got right on the phone to call Memphis's Action News 5 Team Live coverage. And Memphis's Action News 5 Team Live coverage, being as how Wednesday was either prayer meeting or a slow day, news-wise, decided it was going to be a news story. Oh, really? Kind of makes you wonder what... Let's check in with Action News Team 5 Live News Hound coverage and... Oh, Jesus. No, let's don't. Robin Wilkins told Action News Team 5 live coverage, anyone who fears a God, if not God and Jesus Christ, should be outraged. She says Christians should be outraged that a symbol that looks like a pentagram would be allowed in the design of a vehicle used to transport children to public schools. Robin Wilkins went on to say, well, if you can't put a cross on that bus, you can't put a pentagram on it. It's going to get really rough for Robin Wilkins here soon, as soon as she looks up at the nearest flagpole, and, you know, because I'm sure she's an allegiance pledger of great fortitude and verve and determination. And realizes that there's 50 pentagrams right there in the corner of our American flag. And if you think about it being a two-sided flag, there's 100 pentagrams. Wait a minute. 100 pentagrams? That's a pentagram for every member of the United States Senate. I thought we had it all cleaned out now that we had a Republican majority in the Senate. But no, the devil is everywhere. Marsha Hudson, also of Cordova, Tennessee, is not so sure that it's necessarily a sign of the devil, but she said, well, why'd they put it up there? Why'd they put it upside down? Ask Homer Noodleman at the bus plant, who was just getting back from lunch when he put those particular lamps in. Damn it, Noodleman! Your pentagram bus lamps are upside down again. Oh, golly, boss, I'm sorry. Don't you realize what trouble that can make? We're gonna have good, upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing Christians in Tennessee thinking their pentacles and gonna call down demons. So necessarily, because this is the way these stories always work. Team News 5 Memphis Action live coverage had to go out and find themselves a Wiccan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, Carol's thinking outside the bus. What happens when the poor bus mechanic, father of six, simply put those lenses in thinking it would make someone smile, and when he got to work on Thursday was told,
sorry, we're going to have to let you go.
What for?
Because you put demons in the bus.
But anyway, Memphis Team 5 Action News live coverage had to run out and find themselves a Wiccan. And they found themselves a Wiccan in the form of Joe Applewhite, whom Team News 5 Action News live coverage identifies as a practicing Wiccan. Apparently she hasn't gotten it right yet. Still practicing. And being absolutely no help whatsoever, Joe Applewhite said, well, yeah, technically the lights do form a pentagram, but it's not a satanic symbol. See, that's the thing with demons and other imaginary critters. They are whatever you say they are.
Mm-hmm. That's not a demon. That's a bringer of light. Bullshit, that's the devil.
Joe Applewhite went on to say, find out what it really means before you start getting riled up, all worked up about something. Wiccans, we believe in God, we believe in Jesus, but we don't call him God.
But here's how you know that it's a real live news story from Team 5 News Action Coverage 5. Neither Durham School Services nor the school district would answer any questions about the bus's brake lights. So the devil's on the march in Cordova, Tennessee, brethren and sisters.
And so it's a silly little story, and we can have our fun. But again, I think it's also a journalism story, and it's a cautionary tale about what happens in so-called local journalism. Most popular stories at Team News Live Action Coverage 5, Memphis. Police: truck stolen by Kentucky teens, wanted for crime spree, turns up in Georgia. Well, that's better than the Texas truck that turned up in Syria. But Canadian family reunited with their stolen dog, Dixie. Parent outraged over... Okay, so we did that one. Bestseller about Journey to Heaven is pulled. We'll get to that in a minute. 10 women charged with prostitution near schools, churches. I think they're letting out church a little early, don't you? Bartlett police investigates Shelby County deputy for allegedly rubbing child's face in urine. Not even going there. Family says 20-year jail sentence doesn't fit the brutal crime. DCS investigates Hickory Hill Daycare after abuse claims. Women posing as escorts arrested during undercover sting. And finally, stolen Yorkie found, one woman charged. Guess that kind of explains how parent outraged over possible pentagram symbol on Mid-South bus even made the news that evening, doesn't it? Where's the story on how much better off Tennesseans will be if they can just get access to the expanded Medicaid that is part of the Affordable Care Act? Where's that story? Nope, sorry, not there. Yeah, oh, I remember this too. You know what? I think a bunch of us have probably been demon-possessed for a very long time. Carol Baker pointing out, my school teachers used to put those pentagrams at the top of most of my school papers, like it was a good thing or something. Are my teachers to blame for my atheism? No, Carol. They're to blame for the fact that you're possessed by the devil! You know, sometimes I'd get 3 and 4 and 5 of them stars on top of my papers. Sometimes, and you know, And the devil has been at work all over this country because they even make little boxes of pentagrams that have a bitter sticky glue on the back, to remind us of the bitterness of hell. And sometimes they'd be stuck on book reports and stuff in gold and silver. I was very upset when I got the silver ones and not the gold ones, damn it. Oh my, oh my, oh my. So, I tell you what, brothers and sisters of the Horn Family Commune Congregation, instead of being out there all the time looking for coal rollers that are trying to steal the very air that you breathe or poison it, or looking around for signs on teabagger cars that say Obama is the Antichrist, or taking pictures, as Carol has done, of the Cletus Mobile, you best be on the lookout for them satanic symbols, for he is the Lord of this earth, and he marches all around. Beelzebub, the devil, Satan, Lucifer, Lord of the flies! Yeah. And then this. Okay, quickly. What states border Tennessee? All right, that's Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Kentucky, and, of course, the Mississippi River. And, yeah, Kentucky borders Tennessee. I think Kentucky may have a demon problem, too. Hey, well, thank you very kindly to Gerald. Gerald got us started on the evening's fundraising, responding to Diane and Tom's challenge. Much obliged indeed. So, let's see. We got $155 to go to respond to those two challenges this evening. No, wait a minute. The Hackloin Princess in the chat room says Missouri borders... No, there's a river between them. And may it forever be so. Between Kentucky and Missouri. Yeah. Or Tennessee and Missouri. Arkansas. No, that's Tennessee and Arkansas. But there's a river, so we'll just say the river. Yeah. The group is growing in the Horn chat room, by the way. Good evening to Todd and the Hackloin Princess and Ter Yang and our buddy Ron. Yes, indeed. Just a second here. Had a note coming in and needed to get to it. Note coming in from Robert in Australia. Bob, wasn't Satan the devil invented back in the 12th, 13th century by the Catholic Church to explain to its largely uneducated congregation why bad things happen? I can't understand why people still believe in all that silliness. I'm not sure about the super devil, though. Well, I don't know. Once you get the devil into tights and a cape, I think it, well... Truthfully, Shatan, I believe in Hebrew, means something like lawyer or advocate. But in point of fact, the horns and the tail and the pitchfork and all of that stuff, the very simple message of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, was transformed by a guy named Saul who went on the lam and changed his name to Paul. Yeah, it just happens to rhyme. No, I'm not him. And he took it out into the Greek world, and it had to be, and the message had to be transmogrified into something that the Greeks, who had long been accustomed to believing in all kinds of amazing stuff, you know, gods coming down and getting it on with beautiful women and fathering heroes and things like that. So Jesus gets represented in the art as a carryover of Apollo. Guess who gets to be Dionysus? Apollo is, of course, cool and wise, and Nietzsche touched on a lot of this. Whereas Dionysus is ruled by his emotions and revels and drink. And then there are the Maenads. They're kind of scary. And so the cloven hooves, the tail, all of that, straight from Dionysus. That's where your classic Roman Catholic and Orthodox Christian devil comes from. I don't mean to turn this Friday on the front porch into a prayer meeting Wednesday, but how about this? Via our buddy, one of the fraternities, members of the fraternity of Greg. Because we have several. So, Duke University is a high-pollutant, very expensive place to pursue one's higher education. And it is very well thought of. Their basketball team, of course, is particularly well thought of. They project an image of being these, you know, really hard-working, smart, young men basketball players who go out on the court and quietly behave like thugs. But that's because I despise Duke. Never mind. But they are an elite institution in Durham, North Carolina. And at one point in time, recently, Duke announced that a Muslim call to prayer would be broadcast from its chapel tower. Enter right-wingers screaming. The Associated Press report by Jonathan Drew noting, days after announcing that a Muslim call to prayer would echo from its historic chapel tower, Duke University changed course Thursday, that would be yesterday, following a flurry of calls and emails objecting to the plan. Instead, Muslims will gather for their call to prayer in a grassy area near the 210-foot Gothic tower before heading into a room in Duke Chapel for their weekly prayer service. The university, well, what are they doing even letting them go to school there? Well, they think this is America. The university had previously said a moderately amplified call to prayer would be read by members of the Muslim Students Association from the tower for about 3 minutes each Friday. 3 minutes! The Muslims at Duke can't even have 3 freaking minutes because Christians. Michael Schoenfeld, Duke's Vice President for Public Affairs and Government Relations, said it would be up to the students if they want to use some sort of amplification. The original plan drew the ire of evangelist Franklin Graham, Samaritan's Hustle, who urged Duke alumni to withhold support because of violence against Christians that he attributed to Muslims. So they threatened the money, and Duke folded like a cheap suit. Vice President Schoenfeld said, there was considerable traffic and conversation and even a little bit of confusion, both within the campus and certainly outside about what Duke was doing. The purposes and goals and even the facts had been so mischaracterized as to turn it into a divisive situation, not a unifying situation. In other words, the Christians told a bunch of lies. He also said there were concerns about safety and security. I wonder what the Christians threatened to do to the Muslims. Jesus, can't we all just get along? More than 700 students at Duke identify themselves as Muslim, but we can't be having any call. Right. It had been hoped, and Christy Lohr Sapp, who is the Duke Chapel's Associate Dean for Religious Life, me personally, I think universities would be much better off if their students spent all their time working on their brains and not their imagination. Well, okay, I mean, creative writing, art, pottery, interpretive dance. Yeah, that's fine for imagination. But anyway, they gotta take care of the spiritual life, too. Christy Lohr Sapp said before the plans were scrapped because the Christians had a fit, that the move that showed that Duke was committed to religious pluralism. She wrote an article, a column, an op-ed piece, in which she acknowledged that, yes, there's a lot of violence in the world. She said, yet at Duke University, the Muslim community represents a strikingly different face of Islam than is seen on the nightly news, one that is peaceful and prayerful. I didn't know that Duke was founded by Methodists and Quakers. Oh, well, no call to prayer. And, you know, it's no skin off my nose. Or I imagine many others. It's a very noisy world we live in, and as from my standpoint, being someone who doesn't believe in the Abrahamic great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky running around smiting people. Well, I'd say we're probably, let's put it this way. Back before I got to a little college out in the middle of Missouri, they rang their chimes every day at noon for every one of the American hostages being held in Iran. By the time the hostages were released, there was a celebration not only of the release of the hostages, but I was told of the end to the incessant daggum bell ringing. But anyway, Ron in Raleigh writing, speaking of bumper stickers, at the grocery store the other day, I saw a bumper sticker that said, a girl with a gun has more fun. Oh, for pity's sakes. I wondered to myself, did the woman whose two-year-old blew her brains out have more fun? There's one to think about. P.S. Bill O'Reilly says it's easier to believe in the baby Jesus than science, so obviously it's easier to believe in Satan, no matter how silly it is. But see, and I hate to be agreeing with him, what Bill O'Reilly said is true. It is easier to believe in baby Jesus. It's easier to believe in crackers that turn into meat in one's tummy. It's easier to believe in a prophet who flies on a flying horse that's got wings and stuff. It's easier to believe in a world that is supported on the back of an elephant standing on a turtle, and it's turtles all the way down after that. It's easier to believe in Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy, because all you got to do is believe, Tinkerbell. Facts and knowing, well, that's a different critter now, isn't it? Sure it is. Gracious sakes. But anyway, where were we? Oh, Kentucky, Stan. Enter State Senator C.B. Ambry. I'm just curious about old C.B. Wondering where he's from in Kentucky, Stan. Well, he represents District 6 in Kentucky, Stan. Former mayor of Beaver Dam, Kentucky. Oh, look. The goddess of irony never quits. I had no idea. He's an alumnus of Duke University, not to mention Kentucky Wesleyan College, University of Kentucky, and University of Louisville. Although the only university to finally award him an actual degree was Western Kentucky University over in Bowling Green. He resides in Morgantown, Kentucky, which is, oddly enough, not in eastern Kentucky. But C.B. Embry recognizes the true nature of the problems that America faces. And he's gone to work on them there in the Commonwealth of Kentucky Stands Legislature. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, I ran across a story earlier today that noted, where is it? Oh, dang it. Now I'm going to have to go find it again. Well, the list came out of the 10 the 10 least educated states in Merca. There it is. There it is. Now, granted, this is not something of which I'm particularly proud. I'm not proud of it at all. I'm rather fond of being atypical in this regard. The least educated states in America. Number 10, Oklahoma Stan. Number 9, Tennessee Stan. A pattern will emerge. Number 8, Talibandiana. Number 7, Nevada. Number 6, Alabama Stan. Number 5, and it's a tie for fourth between Louisiana Stan and Kentucky Stan. So, yes, we're talking about C.B. Embry from the fourth least educated state commonwealth in Merca. And they got a lot of problems in Kentucky, Stan. They got a meth problem. Even worse than that, they got a prescription, a non-prescription, buy them on the streets, whatever, chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor, snort them, cook them, shoot them, whatever, narcotics problem. They got a teen pregnancy problem. They obviously have an education problem. They have an economic problem because they've got an entire segment, one-third of their state, falling into the abyss of economic collapse, eastern Kentucky, because of over-reliance on the coal industry. They've got a jobs problem. But State Senator C.B. Embry, breaker, State Senator C.B. Embry has identified the root, if you will, of all of Kentucky Stan's problems. By the way, West Virginia is the least educated state in the Union. Yeah, we're worse educated than effing Mississippi. Hello? Yeah. You know, something tells me I'd better hang on to that story. It might come in handy later. No, he's identified the root of all the problems. because State Senator C.B. Embry has done went and introduced a bill in the Kentucky stand legislating and the purpose of the bill is to address the burning and critical issue of going potty at school. SB76BR942, C. Embry Jr. introduced in the Senate of the Commonwealth of Kentucky stand on the 9th day of January, year of our Lord 2015. An act relating to the physical privacy of students and declaring an emergency. Oh, really? An emergency. Create new sections of Kentucky Revised Statutes Chapter 158 to ensure that student privacy exists in school restrooms, locker rooms, and showers. Require students born male to use only those facilities designated to be used by males, and students born female to use only those facilities designated to be used by females. Identify consequences for using facilities designated for the opposite biological sex. Identify the act as the Kentucky Student Privacy Act, all caps, emergency! No? Really? Oh, I didn't say anything about the damn hockey puck, did I? Hockey puck. Oh, too late. You're already grinding your molars, aren't you? There's more to the bill than that. Over to the USNews.com, they write about it. And Stephen Nelson, in a story dated today, notes that State Senator C.B. Embry says he's not being a bully. He supports strong anti-bullying laws. And he says, I have a gay friend. We won't say who. Stephen Nelson, writing for U.S. News, reports Kentucky students using sex-segregated bathrooms and locker rooms could win $2,500 if they catch a member of the excluded biological sex there under proposed legislation. Well, hell, this is going to be fun. It's going to be like the Hunger Games in the potty. The bill intends to crack down. Oh, really, Stephen Nelson? Crack? We're going to use crack in a potty story? Okay. The bill intends to crack down on school employees who allow transgender students to use bathrooms and locker rooms designated for the opposite biological sex. But, as written, the bill authorizes lawsuits not only if school personnel approved of such facility use, but also if they failed to take reasonable steps to prohibit the person encountered from using facilities designated for use by the opposite biological sex. I've heard of playing hide the salami, but this is ridiculous. Students who sue in state courts, according to the bill, would be entitled to $2,500 for each violation and are also eligible for damages for psychological and emotional harm. No, really, Your Honor. I just got done with basketball practice and I walked in there and I was just going to take a leak.
And there she was with her verganda. But she's wearing bib overalls like she's one of us boy people.
The court awards you $2,500, son. Don't spend it all in one place. That's true, Carol. Tell me, who can stop pissing midstream? It's never been one of my talents.
No, really, Your Honor. I just went into the girls' lounge. I was just going to freshen my makeup a little bit. And I looked over there. And granted, she looked like a girl, but I seen her in the stall there. And she lifted up her skirt, and there was her whang-dang-doodle.
The court awards you $2,500, darling. Don't spend it all in one place.
But it's not just the $2,500 on this little, genitals,
who's got the genitals, game show that C.B. Embry wants to create in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. Oh, I know people like Dwayne and our buddy Corey in the Free State of Louisville are just hanging their heads right now, but you know what? This might engage students. This might keep our young Kentucky scholars in school. Well, hell, they could probably, because, you know, that Obama socialist, Kenyan Muslim anti-colonialist wants to give away free socialism college to everybody in America for 2 years. Well, this could help them pay for community college the way that Jesus wanted them to, with whole cold hard cash that they found by looking for penises in the girls' room and vergandas in the boys' room. By the way, the offending school would have to pay the damages along with the attorney's fees. I'm sure that the legal hustle mills that represent the right-wing religion industry are gearing up and even now writing their pleadings for this. Now, U.S. News contacted upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing Christian Senator C.B. Embry. And unlike any human being who was ever born male or female and doesn't feel comfortable in their biological sex, C.B. Embry acknowledges that his bill may need modification. Because apparently it has suddenly dawned on C.B. Embry that, yes, in fact, he's created a new reality show inside Kentucky schools. C.B. Embry says he wouldn't want teens to stage incidents to win payouts. Now, where do you come up with a stupid idea like this? In a state like Kentucky, with as many problems as Kentucky has, who could possibly have prevailed upon C.B. Embry? That's a big 10-4. To introduce this bill. Embry says he wrote the bill at the request of the Family Foundation of Kentucky, a guardian of family values. Because a high school in Louisville, you know, the civilized part of Kentucky, decided to let a transgender student use female bathroom facilities. And then the oversight board upheld the decision. The bill does go on to create separate but equal facilities for transgendered children. It's referred to as the best available accommodation for individual transgendered students whose parents or legal guardians requested in writing, including the use of single-person or faculty facilities. Mm-hmm. C.B. Embry said he has gotten some extremely ugly emails from students But he also said, I'm not prejudiced. I think students should be allowed to dress however they like. They're certainly welcome to live their lives as they choose. If they want to dress as the opposite sex and the school's okay with that, that's fine. They just can't go potty. Maybe they could use a cork or a carrot or something. I don't know. Embry says while he believes it's important to keep transgender students from making members of the opposite biological sex uncomfortable, he doesn't support banning gay and lesbian students from places where peers of the same sex are in a state of undress. I don't think we can create a situation where no one's ever offended or uncomfortable, says the state senator, who claims he knows of at least one gay person who supports his effort. I have a friend, and we can all say these things. Then why bother, Senator? Who is a homosexual, and she agrees she doesn't want men in her bathroom. Well, that's fine, because if there's a trans woman in the ladies' room, that ain't a man. See, this is where they get confused. I mean, we talk about, it is said that gender dysphoric, people who suffer from gender dysphoria have gender dysphoria, I'm not sure if suffer is the right word, trans people, whatever, that they are confused about, they're not confused at all. They know who they are. It's C.B. Embry and his lesbian homosexual friend who are the confused ones, because they think that, you know, once you're born one way, that you're that way forever. Jesus Christ, every cell in your body has been replaced by the time you're, what, 7 years old and it happens every 7 years or so? Come on, sevens! Daddy needs a new pair of shoes. I'm very much in favor of strong anti-bullying laws that protect students no matter what the reason for bullying may be. Fat or short, don't speak plain, sexual orientation, whatever. Embry candidly admits he knows of no colleagues who back the legislation. Oh, so he just did this to keep on getting the check from the Kentucky Family Federation. The Family Foundation of Kentucky Stan. Now, see, look at that. Look at the crap I had to take putting your bill out there. Write the check! I think there's a lot of room for a lot of fun with a law like that. Yeah. Natalie says, oh, I'm sorry, not Natalie. That $2,500 damages is a good precedent. Are the Hicks going to encourage gay folk to get to the courts for the 300 years of psychological and physical damage that the Hicks created? No, that's called race judicata. Or adjudicator. It's just a little bit west of Elkader out in Iowa. Oh, Lordy. By the way, going back to Duke for just a minute, Ron and Raleigh points out, just in case you'd like to know, Duke's endowment is just a shade over $6 billion. And even with a $6 billion endowment, they didn't have enough courage to tell Franklin to stick his bigotry where... No, never mind. Right. So, here we are. Top of the hour. Time to fire up the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable. If you want to participate, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc at gmail.com. Or you can use the Gizmo line, 304-663-4676. Only one at a time on the Gizmo line. So we are, as noted, we've got $175 in challenges on the table, thanks to Diane in Kansas, Stan, and our good buddy Tom in the Bay Area. And we have $155 to catch up with on that, and that'll put us good for the end of the week. Hoping that'll happen. The brand new working well again PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. All right, let's get Friday on the Front Porch going. I'm Bob Kincaid. Dadgummit. That's that problem again. Okay, just a second. We'll make this work yet. Sorry. Now maybe it'll go. Here's the break. Thanks, Ron.
This time it was my man, and these women are putting their hands all over his Yamamoto Kanza sweater that I bought, and I'm much, much unhappy about that. I'd hate to come down to the level and become a BW, a basic woman, but if they don't stop, it's gonna get scandalous. Don't slap me. Cause I'm not in the mood. Don't slap me.
Absolutely right, Ron. That was the perfect bumper. This is the Horn Friday on the front porch for this 16th day of January 2015. And I'm always a little leery of this date because, you know, in her life she wrote a lot of really, really bad novels. Atlas Shrugged, Fountainhead, The Sum of All Derp. I don't know. Elisa Rosenberg, wasn't that her name? And operated under the pseudonym in the United States, snuck in as Ayn Rand. Yeah. She wrote a play, though, called The Night of January 16th, and it's really kind of novel. I was in it a million years ago when I was a young and aspiring actor. Somewhere out there may actually be a photograph, because I had to borrow a cop uniform from one of the city's finest for the role I played. It is neat in one regard. It has a conceit built into it in which the members of the audience that come in drop their ticket stubs into a box, and then a jury panel is pulled. They draw 12 names, and they sit as the jury and become part of the play, and the play takes place entirely in a courtroom, and it's a murder mystery. And at the end of the play, the jurors go and vote for guilty or not guilty. And it has two separate endings depending on which way it goes. And it was kind of fun because during the run of the play, I think it was pretty evenly split between guilty and not guilty, which is kind of interesting for at least the actors. Look, it is Friday on the front porch, as noted. We've got $155 to raise this evening to match the matching challenges that are on the table. And let's go immediately to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
Oh, you scared me for a minute there. I was like, did I break it?
No. No. Can I make a correction?
Yes, of course.
You sent out to contact me on gmail.com.
Oh, sorry.
So, Jennifer, if you're out there listening, you got to contact me on Skype.
Ah, I screwed up. I almost always say Skype. But not that time, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Sparky Dunk on Skype. We'll get you in. Just send me a contact request.
Okay. Yeah, Sparky
anyway.
Dunk at Skype, on Skype. A contact request on Skype.
Contact request to Skype.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Let's see. Good evening, Gerald.
Good evening, Bob.
How in the world are you? Thanks for helping this evening.
Hey, no problem. Glad I can do it. Wish I could do more.
We're glad you have.
Wish.
And hopefully you'll get some friends standing there shoulder to shoulder, arm in arm with you soon, and nobody will race you out of the photograph or anything.
That's right. Come on, people. Yeah. Give till it hurts. And then give some more.
Oh, my God. Robert in Australia just letting me know they made the third Atlas Shrugged movie. Once again, a completely different cast. In a hidden valley. How do you have
Kill
a hidden valley in this day and age, right? Yeah, exactly. You know, at 3D movies, they give out the 3D glasses. I think they'd have to give out the U-shaped dart gun and the Thorazine darts to get through that one. Let's see. Also with us, Carol Abel, down in Australia.
Checking in, Bob. How are you doing?
Dandy, dandy. Glad to have you on board this morning. It's morning, right?
It is morning, and it's very hot.
Yeah, of course it is. You know, I on my phone, I make sure that, you know, because it makes sense because sometimes I have to bother John Fox. I make sure that I've got some city in New South Wales noted so I can remember what time it is, but I also get the weather, and it's like, yeah, oh, the high today is 95 Fahrenheit, so... What is it here?
Well, they haven't invented air conditioning down here yet either.
What?
No, it's very little air conditioning.
Oh, maybe yeah. Maybe it's the luxury tax.
I think it's just 1958.
Which could be good and bad at the same time. Wait, do the cars have fins?
Actually, some of them do, but they're the ones that are, you know, old American cars. They're big down here.
Okay. Kind of like, you mean kind of like in Havana?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Okay. Let's see. We've also got, good evening to, good evening, Nikki.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
So glad to have you on board.
Yeah, I thought I'd try to get in here once here, you know. Been listening for a long time, so.
Well,
my sound okay and everything?
You sound wonderful.
Thank you.
You sound like the broadcast professional you are.
Oh, hardly.
well, welcome to the
thank you guys for all inviting me in.
And last but not least, News Ninja Carol Baker is with us this evening. Good evening, Carol. There she is, I think.
Yes.
Okay.
Here I are.
Yeah. I'm sitting. Okay, so I got to ask, what's this about? What's this about cottage cheese?
What?
Your dear sister has been tattling on you. This has been going on for decades, right?
Yes.
Mommy, Carol pottied in the wrong restroom again. Well, that'll
like
cost
that.
You $2,500, honey.
No, she does things to try to make me laugh, and she does things that are so out of character for her that she was always like this Pollyanna wallflower, wouldn't say shit if she had a mouthful.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, she'll just call me the C word or something, and I will just burst out laughing, and I had a mouthful of cottage cheese. And I cleaned it up.
Okay.
But it's funny coming from her.
Oh, I have no doubt because, well, I mean, everybody knows what Barbie sounds like, and so to hear that word and her, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they don't quite.
Well, so we've had our lactose adventures today. I got my lovely gift box in the mail today, and. Those Cajun cheese curds didn't have a prayer.
I can't wait to see what happens when you try what else was in the box.
I'm real. It's going to happen this weekend. I've got ambitions.
Oh, Carol, did you send Bob some stuff in the mail?
Well, not like stuff like y'all mean stuff out there, Larry. But no,
did you get the stuff?
I got the stuff, man.
What stuff you talking about?
It was in that guitar that came over on the bus.
No,
the kind, or there's a new term for it called green jelly.
The good.
Well, what? It came in a great container.
The loud.
Pizza.
Green jelly?
No, I sent him a bottle of my neighbor's homemade apple, or not apple, but peach jalapeno wine.
It's wine, or is it?
It's wine.
It's wine. Got a cork in it and everything. The boys under the bridge would never be able to get into it.
That's not good for me, but that's okay.
Well, no. So I'm thinking I got to taste it, but
I didn't have the courage.
But I've got this notion that it'll be wonderful for cooking, and I've also got a notion that I'll bet it'll make a son of a gun peach jalapeno margarita.
Okay.
I will just stop laughing, and I had a mouthful of cottage
cheese. Oh, Bob, last night Lottie was talking about sous vide cooking, and I've never heard Timmy so happy in all my. He was really thrilled when Bob was showing, you know, Lottie was showing him about sous vide stuff.
Oh, one of these days. One of these days, Lottie will succeed in converting the entire Horn Family Commune congregation to sous vide cooking, and I want to try it. I really, really do, because everything just sounds delicious. So
yeah.
So there's going to be a jalapeno peach margarita, and I'm thinking I'm thinking it's going to be good for cooking too. And by good for cooking, I don't mean in terms of, well, you know, we'll pour a little in the chef and then, no. Because I had some ramp wine once upon a time that wound up being awesome for fried potatoes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I would have used it as a meat marinade, but I just didn't have the courage, so I passed it on.
And
you'll have to report back.
So there will be a report, and I ripped through that bag of cheese curds like nobody's business. I mean, I go to meetings now. Oh, by the way, I got good news, and I can tell that I'm officially an old fart now because I get excited about blood work.
Hey, I just did mine today, or had mine done today.
My triglycerides are lower than they have been in a decade.
Well,
really?
That's good.
Yeah, my not a doctor only almost fainted at the number.
My doctor told me this morning that mine, over the last summer, like over 6 months, said they were really good. I said, well, why do you get a load of these?
Have we been misbehaving?
So you got one for those too? Oh, sorry.
Well, I don't know. I haven't really changed my diet, but I don't know. I just got a bad feeling, you know.
Ah, well. When they take my blood for blood work, it usually, before they even get it to the centrifuge, it usually separates into butter and everything else.
There's like water on the bottom, then, you know, oil on top, and then the solids on top of that.
And
I understand.
Yeah, you were saying something, Carol?
No, it was me, Nikki. But I have to laugh because I always say when I'm out in the sun too long, I swear people can smell bacon.
That's me.
You know, I'm really sun sensitive though, so I fry easy. But that was funny.
Oh, I burn under a refrigerator bulb, Nikki.
Oh, goodness.
And welcome aboard to Jenny.
She had to run out. She'll be right back, Bob.
Oh, okay.
But for food porn, my stepson and daughter-in-law are here.
Mm-hmm.
And she's making this wonderful crock pot ham stew kind of stuff thing.
Ooh, that's
so.
Wait! Stop. Ham stew?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had ham and bean soup.
You have my attention.
Yes, mine too.
I don't know. I saw her putting potatoes in it and. I don't know what else she's
doing. All right, well, we got it. Okay, so.
But she's using some kind of mushroom soup for something else, too. But it's all in the crock pot cooking right now.
Well, that sounds
smelling
yummy.
Delicious.
My son-in-law showed me a gizmo when I was over there not too long ago. It's some sort of super high-tech crock pot slow cooker that doubles as a deep sealed intergalactic deep fryer.
I have one of those.
Mm. We bought something like that for a daughter-in-law.
Is it awesome, Carol?
It is so awesome. and it was a Christmas gift a couple of years ago from somebody, and I've just used the hell out of it. I love that thing. And you can toss a bunch of crap in there and have dinner ready in 20-30 minutes. It cooks meat so fast.
That almost sounds a little bit like sous vide or well, we need Lottie here for that.
It's pressure cooked, but it'll brown your food. It'll pressure cook it, and I mean it's my favorite kitchen utensil.
This is brutal.
What is this? I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention as usual.
Go stand in the corner, Gerald.
Put the bottle down.
Take the straw out.
Mr. Comedian.
Mr. Funny Man. It's like a combination. It's almost like a crock pot, pressure cooker, deep fryer, whatever the heck you want it to be. And it's got all these settings on it. And I've done corned beef and cabbage in it. I've done spaghetti in it. I've done fried chicken in it. I've done just everything. And it's nice because you can just toss everything in it. Like when you get home from work, go do what you got to do. And by the time you're done with all your chores when you get home, dinner's ready.
Yeah, but how is it for hydraulic fracturing?
I don't know. Nobody's ever asked me to use it for that.
I'm guessing second reference this evening. I'm guessing it can fold space if it's anything like the one I saw at my son-in-law's. Okay, so I got to throw this out there for the community to consider, for the extraordinary ordinary roundtable to consider. Got a note in from one of our Gregs. Please don't let me down. Don't forget to speak about the boy who claimed he went to heaven. Are we familiar with this?
Oh, yeah.
So this book sold millions. Credulous, gullible, fundamentalists bought this book in droves. The boy who came back from heaven. A young boy who was 6 years old at the time and was horribly, horribly injured in a car crash in 2004. He was left paralyzed and in 2010 the book came out. And it was all about how he died and went and had a little confab with Jesus, and he met the devil. Wait a minute. Satan? And it has sold more than a million copies. And now the boys said, you know what, I made it all up. And I gotta give props to the kid for admitting that he made it all up. Because that's more than Oral Roberts ever did. It's more than Joyce Meyer ever did. It's more than Joel Osteen or that guy out west with what's his Brokeback Church or whatever. But they have pulled the books, and he's getting the let no longer the name of Moses be spoken in the land of Egypt treatment. But it's a pitiful story. I mean, it's bad enough. Yeah, go ahead.
It went deeper than that, Bob. I think that the guy who authored the book embellished what the kid's perception was to the point to where it bore no resemblance to what he actually experienced. And the mother has a blog that she does, and she was the one who came out and just said, I've had enough. I don't want my son's name connected with this anymore. He hasn't profited financially, because I mean there were a lot of people pretty upset with the kid.
Right. And buried way down in the story is the fact that there is a fractious divorce that has taken place in the midst of all of this. And apparently daddy kept the money.
Oh.
Because one of the claims being made is that even though this thing sold a million copies, young young Alex Malarkey. Not kidding. Said, you know, he made it all up. He was trying to get attention. And Mama continued and said, and we never got a nickel out of it. She said, she wrote in April 2014, almost a year ago, it is both puzzling and painful to watch the book, The Boy Who Came Back from Heaven, to not only continue to sell, but to continue, for the most part, to not be questioned. She apparently doesn't, she hangs out in a different corner of the internet, I think, because, you know, there were a bunch of us who went, what? Really? No. I could talk about how much it has hurt my son tremendously and even make financial statements public that would prove that he has not received monies from the book nor have a majority of his needs been funded by it. When Alex first tried to tell a pastor how wrong the book was and how it needed stopped, Alex was told that the book was blessing people.
Oh, boy. Alex?
Amen. Who? Oh, no, wait, this isn't Wednesday.
Yeah, right.
Alex who?
Alex Malarkey.
Well, they're all Malarkey. So,
yeah.
Well, you know, what's the problem? Because
I'm glad I was muted, because when you said that Malarkey name, I started laughing my ass off.
Well, see, I mean, if people understood that the real deity in this world is the goddess of irony, we'd have this all sorted out. Oh, hey, I forgot to do something. Hey, Bill.
Yes, sir.
There you are.
Hi, Bill.
Good evening, folks.
Hey, Bill.
Hey,
Bill.
Hey. Thank you. Well, he is for horses, not for men. There's another part of that I can't remember anymore. There's a little, one of those little poems that turns out to be a joke. Problem
something
is, too many of things we... Yeah. Go ahead.
Thanks a lot for reminding me, Bob, to call the doctor and set up a... set up a time to arrange a blood drawing or drawing my blood.
Oh, fun.
Yes. Like you said, I now get excited about getting my blood drawn. So,
isn't it fun being a codger?
Well, I'm used to it because I usually am supposed to get it done. I'm supposed to get it done every 3 to 6 months anyway. So,
well, I was all excited. I was told I don't have to have it done for another 6 months. We're moving me off the 3-month plan. And I'm almost not diabetic at all.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Great.
That's good.
Is there a way to really control it once you're pre-diabetic, which I've been, is there a way to really control it so that you don't get the diabetes?
Diet.
It, exercise.
Well, in my case,
watching your sugar intake, monitoring your sugar levels would be a good thing to, you know.
Yeah, do you monitor, Larry?
They don't have me monitor. They say that I'm not quite in the range where they feel that they need to give me any kind of medication right now.
Yeah, but just for yourself, you can monitor.
Oh, no, I'm not. I haven't done that.
Well, and yeah. and that's something I think I brought up some time back. I was cruising along, checking my blood sugar every day. Oh, that looks good. Oh, that looks good. Oh, that looks good. And over the course of time, I wound up with like 3 different monitors. I had one from Wally World, and their Wally World strips. I hated it, but it was back when I didn't have any coverage, and it was the cheapest I could do. I had another that was given to me as a sample. And then I've got this latest one, which is by Bayer.
Mm-hmm.
And just because I'm a crank, I decided one day, well, look, I've already got a hole in my finger. Let's check with all 3 devices. And I checked, and all the strips were perfectly within their date ranges. They weren't expired, any of that. So I checked, you know, out of the same hole in my finger, I checked my blood sugar on all 3 devices.
Uh-huh.
And I got everything from 78 to 165.
Wow.
So what can you do?
Well, your blood sugar will change from test to test, but that's quite a jump. Was it after you ate or anything?
No, I check first thing in the morning before I consume anything.
Oh, you do a fasting in the morning. Okay.
But the thing is, it's not like I waited 5 minutes, but I mean, it was literally all squeezing the same drop of blood out of the same hole.
Ouch.
On three different monitors at the same time.
And each monitor might have different too. It's hard to tell. You know, it is weird, but I've done that even just with my own one monitor. Changed it or checked yeah, several times.
And each monitor
sometime.
Might have different too.
It's an echo.
Yeah, that's Ron trying to get in.
I get one from Freestyle in the mail like every 6 months, whether I ask for one or not, and it's always the same stinking meter.
When you go to the doctor, like I'm going to go to the doctor next week, and I say, well, I'm interested in, do I need to check my blood sugar regularly? Do you have a suggestion about which device I should use? Are they going?
Suggest whichever monitor has the strips that are paid for under the formulary for your plan.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm using the Bayer right now, because that happens to be the strips that the plan pays for.
Yeah, and mine's Freestyle. Now, but as far as it,
and the other question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I'm sorry to talk over you. I've just. You know, this is what I do. I had another thought coming immediately. And the other thing, you have insurance, you know, I have insurance through Medi-Cal and Medicare. And other people have insurance through other means and other plans. Do all of these plans have a certain kind of formulary where they restrict you? In other words, Bob, you've got a plan and somebody else on the call has a plan and they all have different formularies. And
yes.
You can only choose within that particular group of
yeah,
items.
unless you want to spend a fortune on test strips, because
right.
100 test strips is like $100 if you just pay retail.
Okay. All right.
But if you're looking for the one that might be the most easiest as far as pain goes for your fingertips or anywhere else, the Freestyle Light takes the smallest blood sample.
So, if you choose it,
it's nice. And then I don't use the little stabby device that they gave me, you know, the thing you prick your finger with, the Lancer. I still have one from an old meter, but because I can adjust it to a smaller level because I bleed really easy from medications. So.
Yeah. You know, Bob, I have a really hard time with talking over people. Because I'm asking a question and then I'm got something else immediately that comes up in my brain that I want to ask, and it's hard for me to pay attention to who's coming on, and I'm hearing myself echo.
Yes. And that's because you've got a very, very active mind, Larry, and part of that comes from being half Vulcan.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it's a little.
That's
too
our
fast
ongoing. That's our ongoing. Larry is a Vulcan joke.
That's the.
Funny. I like that.
Yeah, well, sometimes it's too fast for its own damn good.
Well, live long and prosper. That's a great motto.
Well, you know, the problem I have is sometimes my mind outthinks my fingers when I'm typing in chat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or vice versa, one or the other. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah, Timmy suggested that I ask one question and make one statement, and somebody who's not on the chat anymore suggested that I be succinct and that I wait, and then in that way I won't be stepping over people, and I'll be allowing other people to be able to make their statement without...
So one of these days, Tim's either going to be a lawyer or a UU minister. I haven't figured out which.
Well, I'm just here for the plucky comic relief, you know. It's all about timing.
Well, he still might be going to Canada.
Yeah, Tim was talking about going to Canada for a really long time. I can understand, you know, why he would want to do that, because the kinds of things that he's facing here in the States are, you know, I can see where the grass might be greener somewhere else, but I'm not sure that it really is greener somewhere else.
What you call it when they cut you and they stick a wire through your femoral artery? And I've watched this done on me a couple of times and watched this thing moving through you. You know, it's a heartbeat damn, you know. Of course, I probably will be with my attitude if I believe in it. Well, I forget what they call that. But I've had
You're
it done two or three times.
Go the ahead. Heart catheterization?
Yeah, the catheters. They've done catheters on me a lot, and they said, well, you do have a heart, contrary to what people tell you.
I get one once a year, so I hate it every time.
One what?
You had heart problems?
Heart catheterization. Mm-hmm. Well, one for the last 6 years since I've had a heart attack, so.
Oof. I had one when I was 51 years old. My old man got killed by one when he was 57. So it's a, what they say about a family tradition, yes. What can I tell you?
Yeah, and I don't care what you do. I don't care what you do. You're not going to make me play Hank Williams Jr.
Well, he died at 27.
No, Hank Williams Jr. is... sadly, still with us.
You're right. Hank Williams Jr. is not Hank Williams. You're right. I'm sorry.
I thought he was 29, but maybe I just
spoke too fast.
I think he died in
1953.
Oak Hill, West Virginia, wasn't it?
Yep. And you know what? We don't value anything. We don't value our heritage for anything but coal, because they tore down the gas. And see, nobody really knows where Hank Sr. died. They just know that he was found dead. His driver noticed that he was dead in the back of a car at a gas station in Oak Hill, West Virginia.
I think he was coming up to Ohio for some work, some music work, I think.
That's really close to you, Bob, is Oak Hill.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just a stone's throw.
And, by the way, were Jimmy Rogers and Hank Williams and the Carter family, were they the fathers and mothers of whatever we consider to be country music today?
Well, the Carter family is considered to be the first family of, you know, Mother Maybelle and all that. Yeah, they were the first family, and that's the kind of thing that's taken up in bar brawls who's best and who was the most. But there's an arc. And the Carter family, and along comes, the early cast of the Grand Ole Opry. Is a who's who. You know, just a couple of weeks ago, little Jimmy Dickens died.
From Bolt, West Virginia.
From Bolt, West Virginia, absolutely.
Ever been there? I've been there.
I've been up over Bolt Mountain.
Oh, what a trek.
Oh, hey, a little bit of fun with West Virginia news. I had a note earlier today from Boss Man Wayne. The brand new no kidding repig licking majority in the West Virginia State Legislature has gotten right on it. SB 245. Repealing the requirement for prevailing wage payment for public improvement construction.
Oh, we knew that one was coming.
God. You mean they're gonna start requiring the people that do public works to be slaves?
Well, you know, minimum wage.
Right.
What's that, $1 an hour?
Actually, West Virginia's minimum wage just went up to $8. Yeah, go, Gerald.
Well, okay. Prevailing wage is all part of the Davis-Bacon Wage Act. And what there's a common misconception about what prevailing wage is. Basically, Bill Cole, who is now the Senate president of the new Republican legislature here in West Virginia, has some kind of vendetta against prevailing wage. He thinks construction workers in this state make too much money. They've got some kind of bullshit study that they can build three schools for the price of one.
Oh, God, how many times have I heard that?
Yeah, well, it's just not true. But basically what it does is it levels the playing field for the contractors of the state. That means that contractor A has to pay, you know, a carpenter the same wage that contractor B does on federally funded or state funded projects. That would be schools, highways, bridges, whatever. And, you know, it's basically levels the playing field. Now, if we repeal that, then, you know, out-of-state contractors can come in and pay whatever they want to pay, because there's no requirement to pay prevailing wage.
Right, but it also serves, and this is where I wonder if they're overreaching a little bit, or if West Virginia's working class is just dumber than a handful of hammers. See, you get, okay, first of all, prevailing wage in West Virginia is based upon union scale.
Well,
it's done by
the Department of Labor.
Right.
They send out questionnaires and to the contractors and to the unions, and, you know, what do you pay this type of worker in this area? And it's different all over the state. You know, we used to call them A, B, and C counties, you know, A, B, and C rates. If you go up north, it's lower than it is here where I am, and obviously it changes from county to county. And they wait for the contractors to respond to these, and the problem is only the union contractors will answer them. The non-union contractors just don't answer the questionnaires.
Can I jump in for a second?
Sure.
The union contractors for the IBEW never had to answer the the local union did all the wage survey paperwork.
Yes, that's true. Sparky, then, and the unions answer them here as well, but the contractors do too.
Most of the ABC contractors, it was Associated Building Contractors. I've been through this prevailing wage battle back in the 90s.
Yeah, y'all won.
Yeah, we won. We kicked Pete Wilson's butt. And then we got Gray Davis, and he put in a law where no frickin' Republican governor can ever screw with prevailing wage again.
And
well,
see,
what's going to do away with it here.
Well, what's important though is that's why I wonder if it's a case of Republican overreach, because it's not. They're doing it because they hate unions. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
And they would like like to break the building trades in this state, because the building trades remain the strongest and most viable manifestation of a union presence in West Virginia. In point of fact, I think it's fair to note that in the first year of this program's existence, we got started with the help of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation, and then later on, the Carpenters. And that got us through the first couple of years. But what happens, though, is that lest any, and I know you know this, Sparky, and I know you know this, Gerald, some people may not, on a prevailing wage job, it's not a matter of you only get prevailing wage if you're a member of a union. Everybody gets that. So let's say there's a union carpenter working a job, and he's getting $35 an hour. Well, the non-union carpenter working right next to him is getting the same $35 an hour, but the non-union carpenter is not having pension and health care and
fringes.
Union dues pulled out of his payday. So he's tickled pink. He gets it all. He gets that whole $35 an hour in his check. And here's the question for me. This is why I ask if it's overreach, and I hope it is. But then again, we are the least educated state in the union, and, you know, take that for what it's worth. So what the Republicans are trying to do, and if progressive people in the state had any brains, and that's not fair because there are a lot of great progressive people in the state. The unions will take care of the unions. The unions will issue a call to arms on this, so to speak, figuratively. But the question is, what are the unaffiliated non-union workers who are making that money going to do for themselves? Because they like that $35 an hour. Whatever a laborer gets, or an electrician, or a sheet metal worker, or a UA welder, whatever. They like that prevailing wage. Now, but wait, How are they going to like it when they're making $10 an hour? Because that's where it's going.
Because that's the part that people don't realize. They say, you're making 30. I know Bill Cole stood in the Senate down there one time and with a stop and slow sign, and pretending like he was a flagger. And he said, we're paying 30. I don't remember what it was at the time. It would be my scale, but it was like $36 an hour, $37 an hour, somewhere in there to do this. And he just turned a sign back and forth. Of course, I would invite Mr. Cole to come out and stand on the damn highway for 10 hours with no brakes or anything and actually flag traffic. I've done it. It's not exactly an easy job. I mean, you don't do anything, but it's quite painful on your back.
Here in California, you can't do it unless you're certified.
Well, it's the same way here as far as...
And you're also personally responsible for the lives of people.
Exactly. Bob, and that's why you have to be trained. But the other part of the equation is, you see that. That's what the contractor is paying. That's what the prevailing wage is. So let's say $37 an hour, and I know it's right around in there. But on top, of that $37 an hour, that guy flagging the traffic's only getting like 20 or 21, which is a good living wage. The rest of it goes to his pension, his health and welfare, which would be his insurance, or any annuities or any kind of other parts of the fringe that the union handles. And, these guys that are working non-union, they're getting that all on the hip, as we call it. So they're getting 37 bucks an hour. So
can I give you an example of what my wage package was like, 54 something an hour when I retired here in California for a journeyman inside wireman.
Yeah, that's about what they make here.
And
obviously mechanical trades make more.
But on the check, I was only getting 34 something because I was forced to put a certain amount of money in my pension because of an agreement we had. And I had a medical annuity account, which is awesome. And now I'm drawing my pension.
Right.
So
exactly. That's what it is. See, that's what makes me so mad about this attack on prevailing wage and right to work. Right to work doesn't guarantee you a job, contrary to what you're led to believe.
That's right.
It's the right of employers to pay you a crap wage.
Yeah, see, this is what makes me mad.
And it's the right of a worker not to pay union dues.
Well, I won't even get into that. But here's what makes me mad about the whole damn thing. I did the right thing. I went out and I got a damn job, and I worked, and I did what I was supposed to do, and I paid into my pension. And now these fuckers are going to take it away from me because I did the right thing. Now, where's the fairness in that?
Bob, I wanted to ask a question about this. We're talking about, and I wanted to ask this of Gerald and Duncan and those of you that work at union jobs. There are people that are working as independent contractors, and they're not part of a union, and they don't like unions. And I want to know why it is that they would rather not have a union, because if they have a union, at least they have some protection.
Well, Larry, that's an almost impossible question to answer, because everybody has their own reasons. I'm sure most of the people in this group would argue that they've been brainwashed, that they've been fed bad information. It's possible. I mean, there are people out there who have had bad experiences with individual locals. Anything can go into that. One thing to point out, though, Gerald has mentioned this guy named Bill Cole, who has gubernatorial ambitions, by the way, in this state.
I'm sure.
He's in the auto business.
Yeah, he's got a great big dealership down in Princeton and Bluefield.
Yeah. And here's the fun part. I guess he's trying to look a little more man of the people-ish. His twin-engine Beechcraft jet aircraft just went on the market. You can get Bill Cole's used twin-engine Beechcraft jet aircraft for the low Cole's Automotive price of $3.8 million.
Let me grab my checkbook.
Almost laughable.
Yeah, that's what my dad used to say, Carol. Hell, write a check.
Well,
wait, I don't want to let this blow by. This is a golden opportunity for the horn. I mean, you know, we've already got the hangar built.
Do you want to do a Kickstarter or something?
Well, no, not for the Kickstarter. No, let's just do this. Let's just buy a Horn jet. We'll put the Horn logo on the tail section. It'll be cool. We'll never be able to fly it. Oh, well, never mind. I think I was getting out in front of myself a little bit there.
Well, what these guys really want to hear is a good song from years ago. It was That's the Sound of the Men Working on the Changing. Yeah. Yes, sir. Bring them back.
Oh, yeah, those are the good
ones. Anybody see Cool Hand Luke, the movie, or read the book?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I was getting a haircut earlier today, and there was a Judd song playing on the country radio music station about Grandpa Tell Me About the Good Old Days. And I try not to bother my barber when he's working on what little hair I have left. But I said to him, them good old days they were kind of tough, weren't they? He said, you said it, Buster.
Well, the one thing I wanted to say before we got onto another topic about that, what I would like for everyone to realize is, you know, prevailing wage, it sounds like that's a lot of money. But you got to realize that construction work is seasonal work. That's not a 52-a-week-year job, 365-day-a-year job. It's seasonal. And what the people who are not in unions, in labor, in organized labor, what they need to realize is the reason they're making what they make working for a non-union company is because of the unions, to keep the unions out. You know, they pay a higher wage to keep you from organizing.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. I mean, if you break the unions, watch the wages plummet. I mean,
absolutely. Long, long ago, when my father worked on the silicon furnace just down the mountain, and you know, Gerald, you know where Carbide is.
Oh yeah.
Well, it's Elkem or something now, but it was they had several silicon furnaces and. They were organized there. Well,
Boomer that we're talking about?
Alloy.
Okay. Yeah. Well, right down the road from Boomer.
Yeah. Just past Fallsview and Charlton Heights.
Right. I know what you're talking about.
But anyway, they were organized there. My father was a member of the union. And he had a buddy who worked for Carbide on down a ways, down the valley. And he was non-union. And they'd get, you know, to talking over a game of eight ball or whatever. Well, it sounds like cocktail hour. But anyway, the non-union guy would say, I'm really grateful for you union people because you keep my wages high. Because Carbide's more willing to pay me more money than they pay you to keep me from signing a union card. He said, but every now and then they walk around and they bring us all a couple of slices of bread with a big old pile of shit in the middle, and they say, here, eat this. And he says, because I don't have a union, I have to eat it.
Yep. Exactly.
And that's the reality.
And I'm not trying to dominate the conversation or anything,
Gerald, very important.
Yeah,
Gerald and Bob.
Wait, Larry.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Sparky. Yes, Sparky.
Yeah, I mean, please mute your mics when you're not talking. But anyway, I was going to say I was always getting laid off on unemployment because I was a job foreman. And I'd go from one job to the next, and sometimes the next job wouldn't start for 6 weeks to, you know, anywhere from, you know, 2 months or something. If it's wintertime, there ain't no job starting up in wintertime. So a new job would usually start in the spring, and we'd go through there. But that was when it really rains out here, it kind of slows down construction, especially like the rain we had last month.
Well, here in West, by God, Virginia, Stan, it's a mud hole from, you know, Thanksgiving till the end of March.
And it is seriously wrong right now.
And usually you get figured laid off if you work construction.
I am fortunate to work for a small contractor who is very good to me. I mean, very good. A lot of guys aren't. But, you know, I just don't understand where the hatred is for organized labor.
the Koch brothers have spent so much money here, they've basically brainwashed the population, and the union's bad. And, you know, that's the other thing. You know, the unions only control, like, last I checked, like 10% of the workforce in this country.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, if you know, I don't understand. I don't.
Well,
I
mean, I'll tell you what my contractor used to tell me. He said, I'd love to pay you guys all the money in the world because, you know, but we do have the collective bargaining agreement, and that's what I live by. That's what you live by. And then he loved it because he was ex-IBEW himself. I mean, come through, but.
Right.
He liked having the apprentices and people that know what the fuck they're doing.
Well, I've got no complaint with the wages. I mean, the wages are good. It's a livable wage. I mean, I have a good standard of living.
Yeah, I mean, he was great for me. I mean, he kept me going off and on for over 20 years.
Well, the last remaining vestiges of the middle class that we recognize from the post-World War II era in the United States are largely a result of what little remains of the organized labor movement in this country. And I'm sorry I say what little remains, but it's a fact. What little remains. We went for the highest that organized labor
37%?
Had 37% during the Eisenhower administration, and it's been as low, I think, under the Bush administration. It dropped to what, 8?
7 or 8, yeah. Well, you know, it all came about when St. Ronnie fired all the air traffic controllers and broke the PATC.
Right.
That's where it all started, right there, in 1981. You know, one of the first damn things he did, break organized labor, and it's been downhill ever since.
I got an introduction to that when I started college, because the first girl I dated in college, her daddy had been a Patco air traffic controller. They lived in a nice house in the suburbs, and it went to hell overnight. Because Ronald Reagan simply destroyed those people.
Yeah, I was young. I was, you know, just young, but I know my labor history. I know what happened.
Where is the good labor? I wanted to say a couple things. First of all, the thing that I wanted to say while I was interrupting Duncan and everything, and I'm sorry that I did that. John Mackey of Whole Foods. Pays his workers really well just for the purposes. He hates the Employee Free Choice Act. He's always hated it. He's always been against it. But he sure does know how to pay his employees very well, and they like working for him. But when I mentioned unions, one of the employees said, "I can't talk about unions in this shop or this store."
Look,
second thing I wanted to ask, you were mentioning, Gerald, that you know your labor history. Do you know of a good one-volume labor history that I can read that'll go from the very beginning of unions, you know, trade unions or whatever, and goes up to the present?
I can't really recommend anything. I mean, there are hundreds of books. One of the things here in West Virginia, you know, United Mine Workers, John L. Lewis, I mean, you know, he's St. John L. Lewis,
yeah.
Was one of the labor leaders that actually started the CIO, because the AFL-CIO that you know of now used to be two different entities. The American Federation of Labor didn't want unskilled labor in their trade unions. And John L. Lewis was the leader of the mine workers, and he was one of the ones who formed the CIO to bring unskilled labor, would be like auto workers, mine workers, things like that, factory workers.
Uh-huh.
Is what's considered unskilled. I mean, there's skill there, but it's not a trade. It's a traditional trade.
Larry, I'll send you a link back channel.
Okay.
Of the IBEW. It's called Those Who Dared.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff out there, Larry. You just got to kind of look for it. It's there. And it's, you know, pretty interesting, really.
But why is it that the Wobblies are not considered legitimate in the AFL-CIO people? for whatever reason.
International Workers of the World?
Yes.
Well, here's one of the problems that labor unions have, okay? And it goes right back to what Bob was talking about. You got a guy who's working for a non-union contractor on a prevailing wage job. So he's getting $40 an hour on the check. You know, that's how much he's taking home. That's what he's getting paid. He doesn't have any insurance. He doesn't have a pension or any kind of annuities or savings or any of that through the union. He gets all of the money. Okay. Well, you're an organizer of whatever trade it is, and you go out there and say, hey, look, I want you guys to sign these checkoff cards. We'll get this company union. I'm going to take 4% of your wages, 4% of your gross for union dues every week. I'm going to take $7 an hour for your health and welfare. I'm going to take $4 more and put in your pension for you, and then I'm going to take a couple of dollars and put in an annuity for you. How about that? So you're only going to get, you know, $30 on the hour or 20. Well, I didn't do the math there, but you get the meaning. And that's a hard sell.
And let's understand something.
Like, I don't need a damn union to watch my money. I know I can just take care of my own money.
Yeah.
I did it for 3 years, Gerald. I know how hard it was.
Yeah, I mean, we all start out that way.
Because I was the last local union president of the local in Redding, California.
Yeah, well, let's
442.
Let's remember one thing here. What Larry mentioned about John Mackey over at Whole Foods. You know, this is a place that'll sell you a pound of organic, free-range, cruelty-free, no-tears ground beef at, you know, $16 for a half a pound. Nobody, you know, a working family can't shop there, one. And two, and the person who taught me this lesson all the way down to the ground was Boss Man Wayne. When employers treat their employees well, unions are unnecessary. You know, as Boss Man Wayne said, he says, you know, I'm trying to work myself out of a job. I'm trying to teach employers to treat their employees well. Unfortunately, or not, well, however you want to characterize it, the way you wind up having to teach employers to treat their employees well is by organizing so that they can't be as abusive as they frequently are.
And he's exactly right. If the employers were just as good as we were led to believe by the right of this country, that unions don't serve a purpose anymore, then we wouldn't need organized labor. But the fact of the matter is, it's just not that way. Period. I mean, Walmart. Look at Walmart. There's a prime example. You know, we've got multiple cases of wage theft. They encourage their people to sign up for government assistance. I mean, what the hell kind of employer is that? What kind of a job is that when you have to get food stamps, working a 40-hour job, 40-hour a week job, just to support a family of three or four? I mean,
right,
bullshit. This is a country of
solely,
I mean,
right, solely for the sake of the Sam Waltonaires, you know, which is a little cancerous knot of human beings who just happen to be members of the Lucky Sperm Club.
Yep.
Signing up for welfare is part of your orientation to go to work for Walmart.
Yeah.
And tell me how that's right. You know, how are you supposed to pull yourself up by your bootstraps and all that bullshit that we hear all the time? You know, personal accountability and all that. When you're making a shit wage and your employers treat you like shit, they cut hours and whatever just because they have to provide health insurance. I mean, come on. What the hell is happening here? When are people going to realize that it's just it doesn't need to be this way?
And hey, let me jump in real quick. It's 6 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the Front Porch, and that's Gerald you've been listening to. And so far, Gerald is the only one who has stepped up this evening to respond to our buddy Tom in the Bay Areas and Diane in Kansas Stan's challenges for this evening. We had $175 in challenge on the table. We got $155 to go, and I'm pretty sure Gerald would like some company. The PayPal button works again. The interface works again at headonradionetwork.com. And, of course, the Postal Service, despite the best Republican intentions, is still delivering mail. So I just wanted to get that out there for people's consideration. Hold on, Larry. Carol, come back into this conversation, please, because I think we were talking about labor in West Virginia, but you know what? this is a national issue. The single biggest leap that labor could make in this country would be to organize Walmart.
Absolutely.
But what is the likelihood of that happening?
Well, considering the really kind of mafioso kind of tactics that they use, there are documentaries out there that specifically address this, Walmart, the high cost of low prices. And if you haven't seen those, you should, because they really kind of show you how, you know, anyone caught attempting to organize, they send people, they will put people on that private jet and send them straight to that store. You are watched. They try to catch you doing something wrong so they can fire you. I mean, it's a bad thing.
And you're not kidding, Carol, about that jet. They have a dedicated jet in Bentonville, Arkansas, the sole purpose of which is to ferry union busters anywhere that they hear the first whisper of organization inside a Walmart. And that's why I apologized earlier when I was talking about having a Wally World blood sugar meter. It galled me to no end to go and buy that. But I happen to have reason to know real Walmart horror stories, and frankly, one that I recently became aware of. I've never seen it in all the horror stories coming out of Walmart, but I tell you what, this one, I was fit to be tied.
Can I say something?
Yeah, go, Sparky. You don't have to.
We have a Walmart distribution center here, and they pay way higher wages than they do in the Walmart store downtown. Basically, because they want to keep the people that they've got and working in there. They don't like turnover in the distribution center. Just as an added point, I know some people that have worked there.
Yeah,
but they want to keep the union out too, because Teamsters try to get in there.
Well, and you know, United Food and Commercial Workers have tried. I think the larger point of what makes it so hard to organize a place like Walmart, Carol, is that they already have their entire employee base in a state of constant fear and intimidation. For instance, if you work for Walmart, they will periodically call you, and you'll have to do it off the clock, and you will not be compensated, to listen to them in a meeting harangue the idea of organized labor. You just have to go to a meeting and listen to them dog cuss unions for half an hour. And it is not optional. You cannot walk out. You will be fired if you refuse to go to this meeting.
But they're doing it on your own time.
Yeah, it's uncomfortable.
What are you going to do, Larry?
Yeah,
really, what are you going to do?
I mean, you've got a family. It's the biggest employer in your community. If you can't hold a job at Walmart, everybody else you apply with is going to go, oh, this guy must be trouble.
Yeah, I mean, some people, the only employer. Like I said, what are you going to do?
Wait, what Bill? What Bill?
I'm going to clear this line so Kevin can get in.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right. Take it easy,
care.
Bill.
Thanks for the conversation, folks.
Oh, always a pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
Bob, this is Ron in Ottawa.
Yeah, hey, Ron.
Did anybody down there in the civilized world hear the story about the Walmart that unionized in Quebec?
Yeah. And as quick as they did, Walmart shut down every store in Canada, didn't they?
Nope, they just closed that store, moved all the inventory to other stores, and it was like it never happened.
Wow.
Because, see, something similar happened down here, the meat cutters. See, it used to be that if you went to Walmart, you could find the guy in the white coat and say, hey, could you cut me a ribeye about an inch and a half thick, you know, down from the loin end where it's really good? Oh, sure, no problem. Well, the meat cutters tried to organize. And Walmart responded to that by simply eliminating every meat cutter in America from their stores. So now every piece of meat that comes into Walmart comes in on a truck, vacuum sealed or prepackaged. Like the hamburger says, ground beef product flavor added.
Yeah.
Which means they weighed it down with water.
Yeah, beef from India. Very good, man.
Yeah, right. And it's, and the beef, and it'll have a label on it saying, this ground beef may contain beef from Mexico, Argentina, Chile, China, the United States, Canada, I don't think India. They haven't become, bless their Hindu hearts, they haven't become that capitalized and commercialized yet.
They still allow the cows to screw. What are they going to do with all the surplus?
but I mean, that's the reality of Wally World. And for instance, a lot of states, as we saw, you know, it was treated as an anomaly in the last election, you know, when everybody didn't show up, but the people who showed up voted for Republicans instead of Republican light mugwump Democrats, but at the same time they voted to raise their minimum wages. And so Walmart is responding to that by compressing their wage structure. So everybody in those states who get a better wage, Walmart's going to take it out of the hide of their supervisors and their lower management structure by disappearing those jobs.
And cutting hours.
Yeah.
Well, I read that a couple of things. I read that Walmart, they're the richest damn corporation right now in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely the richest. Secondly, I never really got an answer to my question about why the other unions don't like the international.
Okay, let me just deal with that real quick. The Wobblies. The Wobblies are kind of like in the way that it is in West Virginia. The old UMWA, you know, Gerald alluded to John L. Lewis. In the heyday of the UMWA, the UMWA controlled this state, and it did this state a lot of good. And I'll be the first to say it. Today, the UMWA is a shadow of its former self, and it is a part of the problem in West Virginia, not part of the solution, because they support. If Cecil Roberts could have dynamite or ANFO explosives go off on every mountaintop in southern West Virginia, he would personally push the button to do it and poison God knows how many human beings in the process. He doesn't give a damn. All he wants is the jobs. Well, the Wobblies were deeply entrenched not only in labor organizing but in politics. The industrial workers of the world stood for the idea of a worldwide organization. It wasn't a national union. It was a worldwide organization dedicated to one big union, which was, for all intents and purposes, and most of them owned up to it, Bolshevism. They were communists. And I don't say that as a critique or as a slur. It's just what they were. They were every bit as political as they were economic. And when World War I came along, they were easy to suppress, and they were suppressed brutally. Because, among other things, you had people who refused to go and fight other workers in the First World War. And so the IWW was crushed by the advent of the First World War. And frankly, there is an organization that calls itself the IWW. But it's for all intents and purposes next to nothing. So it's a cipher to even discuss them, Larry. Okay? I'm not telling you it was a bad question. It's just there's nothing to them. Because and if you would go far enough back in the Prism series on YouTube on Ustream, and if you go into Dr. Bill's archives, among other things, what you find out is that, in the late 19th century, you have an organization called the Knights of Labor. And they are very, 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 very dedicated to the idea of living wages and political reform and change. And the Knights of Labor gets more or less crowded out by Samuel Gompers and the American Federation of Labor. You know, those skilled labor guys that Gerald was talking about a little bit ago. And as far as Capital was concerned, Capital found it much easier to deal with the AF of L because they looked and they said, hey, the Knights of Labor want to tear the whole system down and rebuild it from the ground up. The AF of L just says that they want a seat at the table and a piece of the pie. Well, hell, we'll give them their seat at their at the table, and over time we can just cut it. We can just keep cutting the pieces of the pie that we give them. This is easy. And so the that's where that is.
That's where Richard Wolff was talking about the fact that the thing is that when Roosevelt during the New Deal, I almost said New Evil. I'm sorry, that's a Freudian slip. He was able to put all these regulations in to curb the power of big business and to try to, you know, mitigate the worst aspects of the Depression.
Yeah, but sure, and sure, that's how you get the National Labor Relations Act and the NLRB. And within half a generation's time, the Republicans are back in power, and what's the first thing they do? They pass Taft-Hartley, which essentially, in many ways, guts the NLRB.
Well, that's exactly what Richard Wolff is saying. He's saying that Roosevelt was able to put those regulations and those constraints in there, but they gave the Republicans the ability, to overturn them. And little by little, over the last 60 or 70 years, the Republicans have been able to overturn everything. That's what he was saying. And that's why we're in the situation that we're in, because, if you don't deal really if you aren't really hardline with big business, they will find a way to water down all the various, safeguards that you put in place. You'd have to listen to his lecture in order to really get the argument. You can't really come to me because, I may get a few things wrong, but that's essentially what Richard D. Wolff was saying, that the Democrats during the 30s didn't take enough care to be sure that those regulations couldn't be chipped away in the future. And what do you know? They've been chipped away in the future.
And let's bring another caller on the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello.
Hey, Bob, it's Mark calling.
Hey, Mark, what's happening?
Not much. I'll just wait my turn. You
no, go. It's okay. Go. You're on.
Well, I just wanted to share a couple points. The gentleman speaking right now, well, probably about 90% of people in labor unions in the United States have no idea what a wobbly is. They don't know what the international workers of the world are. They don't know a lot about a lot of things to include, unfortunately, their own unions. And also make an observation, which is the job and objective of senior members and people who do know to constantly share and educate, agitate, and eradicate people who are not pro-labor but are within the union. I did it as an active duty Marine. I put heat on your ass. I kept pressure on all those Marines around me to perform, and I do it in the union, too. I put a lot of pressure on people. I make them commit, and I've got the results to show for it. I've got a fucking army here in Florida of warriors that travel all over the country. They don't work for me, but they stand on their own 2 feet, and they're men from their late 20s to their early 60s, some of them in their 70s. So those men in their 70s and 60s were their own warriors. But the men that know me know where we all stand. I'll just leave it at that. But in any case, and also make an observation, one of the ways that non-union workers are baited away from labor unions is a big deal. It's per diem, because a lot of Americans work overtime. Unfortunately, as we all the people listening to the show tonight know, that you basically have to work 70 hours a week to make 40 hours a week wages, because a lot of jobs are even where Sparky's at in California, whether you're doing a solar panel job out in the boonies, you've got to live away from traditionally where you've got to work away from where you live. So, you know, you have to pay for your living quarters. Now, non-union people automatically get per diem. And per diem usually boils down to, you know, what, $40, $50, $60, $70 a day for people. Now, if you work a Sunday in the union, you're making $30 an hour. You're gonna click, $60 an hour on a double time Sunday. And if you work 10 hours, that's a $600 day. And if you work 12 hours, like I did in New York, and made $75 an hour, then you know, I made $900. And excuse me, yeah, that was in New Jersey. But in any case, but the point is, that's the way they bait workers away financially, because they do not want them to organize. I have worked in both worlds. I've committed to the union and have been in my heart my whole life. But I would have to say I am prejudiced towards the unions, because they are more squared away. They are more dedicated. They're more no-nonsense. They're like Sparky on these phone calls. He's not easily rattled. He's a veteran. We have a lot of veterans in the union. We have a lot. I'll tell you another thing, an observation for the listeners. We have a lot of Southerners that work all over the United States. I was having an issue in Minneapolis on a job, just in a short situation, and this pipe fitter general foreman pulled up, and he had a Texas Longhorn sticker on his hard hat. And he's a Southern guy. And I just immediately, that's my fucking ally. Even though I'm a damn fucking Yankee working in Minneapolis, at the refinery up there, we just immediately were allies. It didn't matter where we were from in the country, though in that case it did, and it does. There's a lot of Southern boys, that work all over the United States, to include Canada and Hawaii and Guam, wherever else. So Southerners have an excellent work reputation. And I would say that in defense, of them. So,
yeah, and you get a pushback from me on that, Mark. But the problem is, Southern Union guys are among the most militant.
They are.
But convincing their geographic countrymen.
Correct.
That's a different animal.
I agree, Bob, and I would agree with that, and I put my pressure on those guys too. But I have to say, I've been educated by some Southern boys. I crawled my ass out of an unemployment office in Massachusetts, having worked at the nuclear power plant Pilgrim up there. George Bush changed that law under the last administration, that in order to collect unemployment from a particular state, you have to work in that state. That was almost reasonable enough, unfortunately. But so I had worked in Massachusetts, and I came out, and there's two or three dudes there from Kentucky and Tennessee. Of course, I immediately hit it off with them, because, you know, I'm a Yankee living in the South. So we're shaking hands and hugging each other. But the point I'm trying to make is another thing, and I'm not saying Bob Kincaid's making a comment in any regard concerning that, but a lot of the Southern workers work away from home for 8 or 9 months out of the year. And so when they come home, they're just strictly with their families and immediate friends, just like, you know, your dad hanging out with that guy down the street that was thanking your father for the union effort. So there are many observations. I'll make another real quick point that I've been listening to the show for the last few minutes is also, union contractors or any contract, well, any contractor period can pay above scale. They can pay scale, they can't pay less than scale, but they can pay above scale. And in fact, they do. We had a real competitive job at Turkey Point. Nuclear power plant's been there for about 40 or 50 years, and we just did a major overhaul. And there were boilermakers and pipe fitters that were working for some specialty companies that were getting $100 a day per diem. Now, I happen to luck out. We had four general big contractors on the job, Bechtel being the lead one, and Bechtel wanted the moo-moos of the industry, so they paid per diem. And if you weren't with Bechtel, you didn't get per diem, or you didn't get as much. So it wasn't that kind of money. So it's competitive. I would also, for any people who don't know, there are layoffs for people who don't produce, that are not competitive, or that are not cooperative, that are not contributing. Now, if you drag a unit down, same in the Marine Corps, you know, you drag people down, you're going to get plumbed up by folks. So, you know, it's not as gruesome as the non-union world when it comes to that, but then there's some huge slackers in the non-union world. Those are just a few observations I would make. And I would share with the listeners, in respect to West Virginia, my grandfather, Al Barlick, the union umpire, started out as a union coal miner. And he talked like a sailor to the day he died in his early 80s.
Well, you know, historically speaking, there's a lot of people There's a lot of people who don't live in West Virginia now whose ancestors learned how to stand up for themselves via the UMWA. There's no getting around it. The Ruther brothers would not have been who the Ruther brothers were had they not come out of the hills and hollers of West Virginia.
I just wanted to say one thing. Mark, you're 100% right. On the unions police themselves, if you don't produce, you don't work. But that's a common misconception that the non-union companies want to portray the unions. It's just they protect the lazy and the inept. And it's just not true. And Sparky can tell you this. You know, if you go out and you're a slug, that's what I call them, you're not going to work. You're going to send your ass back to the hall. I mean, that's where you're going.
Can I jump in?
Sure.
Yep. He mentioned Bechtel. I worked for Bechtel. I was a foreman on a termination crew on a power plant.
Certainly.
And, I mean, they got any of the dead wood, they get rid of it. I mean, if a foreman reported he wanted a guy gone, he was gone.
First layoff. That's where they go. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's the way it's
always. Go to the job steward first, and I mean, because we were under project labor agreement on that job too.
Exactly. And another thing is a lot of the times people got a bad taste in their mouth about unions. They think it's, you know, it's us versus them, the unions versus the company, and you know, back in the good old days, that's the way it was, but it hasn't been that way for a long time. At least not in the building trades. Building trades work diligently with their contractors.
I have to say that if you came into our break room there, it's Turkey Point, a huge break room with all crafts in there, you know, boilermakers, pipe fitters, welders, laborers, carpenters, electricians. You'd see a canvas billboard hanging in our break room that's got all of our logos on it, you know, and they're not little tiny logos. I mean, it wasn't Kafka or something, you know. I mean, it was proud, but it also you had Bechtel, and you also had Florida Power and Light up there. It was a team. And one of, matter of fact, one of my buddies, is quite the character, Kenny Flanagan, made that a reality. He was a general foreman on days, and he went around and got the money from people, and we made that. So people felt a sense of pride, and matter of fact, a lot of the superintendents that were on that job were guys that many of us came up through the ranks. I would also make an observation in respect to my, all people sympathetic to unions and my two electrician listening buddies tonight. You know, leadership at different power plants across the country also can reflect a certain craft. In many cases, you'll work at a plant where IBEW is in charge. And a lot of times, I'm glad to hear that personally as a carpenter. But I have worked plants where carpenters are also kind of in charge, and usually, and they work hand in hand very closely with the electricians. But there's a different style of leadership, and people's backgrounds. Boilermakers find themselves in a lot of leadership roles on big jobs. And also share with the listeners, and I'll shut up. But they're building two reactors in Georgia, and they're building two reactors in South Carolina. The one in South Carolina is having issues; it's non-union, and the one in Georgia is cruising right along. And it's a union job. That's a 6,000-man job. There are big jobs going on, and you know, you get the high-speed rail. We just built the World Trade Center. There are things happening that the corporate control media does a good job of, you know, not letting that out or not, definitely not selling it, not pushing it, you know, not broadcasting it anyway. So we're up against a lot, but what I think what we're doing tonight on the radio show is let Americans know that, you know, we're not bad guys. A lot of us have served our country, and, you know, we're just good Americans. We want to, when we're successful, the corporations that we work for are also successful. The companies that we work for, not corporations, seem to be kind of, non-committed to any country, but companies that we work for. My father worked for Continental Electric in Chicago as an electrician, and Bill Lift, who owns it, he sold it to the stock exchange 10 or 15 years ago. But in my old man's living room, my old man, an electrician, here's a billionaire sitting in my dad's living room, and he looked at me, and he said, "Why should I make all the fucking money?" And he wasn't selling me. I didn't need to hear that. He just said that he wasn't being a bully, but this is a very kind man. And he said, "I don't need to make all the money." He literally quoted. He quoted him. He said that. And I was like, Jesus Christ, this is a serious player. And he loved Bill Clinton. But and so, you know, but these are things that handed down to his from his father. And Sparky may know her of Continental Electric. They're pretty big. They're like the second largest company in the United States for electricians, construction company. And the biggest is in New York, obviously. But those are just comments I wanted to make, and I'll shut up.
All right. Well, thank you very kindly, Mark. I appreciate it. We've had a lot of other people jump into the room during the conversation, and I want to make sure that they get an opportunity. I also want to thank Carol. Thank you, Carol, for jumping in there beside Gerald. I really appreciate it. That means we are down to $145 to go to meet this evening's matching challenge, courtesy of Diane in Kansas, Stan, and Tom in the Bay Area. Thank you both of you very kindly. I'd love to see some. Well, it'd be really nice to have some, because you know we fell in a hole earlier this week. You know, glitches being what glitches are, and technology being what technology is. But anyway, I want to thank you both very kindly, and hope that other people will help us meet this matching challenge that's presently on the table. Because
well, Bob, I've been sitting back listening to these guys talk, and I'm a lot smarter now.
I doubt that, Carol.
Well, you haven't just been sitting back listening to people talk. I happen to know that you've got some sort of satanic thing going on the Facebook there. I just noticed that.
Hold on, Larry.
I just want to say Alex from Arizona, Stan, soon is going to be contributing because it's payday today. So look out, Bob. It's coming.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you very kindly.
Bob, can I clear up one thing?
Yes, do.
I said I was the foreman of the termination crew. That doesn't mean that I was looking for people to fire.
No.
Electricians. The termination crew was we land wires.
Yeah, somehow I just don't see you wandering around the job site sparking, going, I'll be back.
Okay, first, please.
We have what we call a connection sheet. And then you go in, and it tells you which wire number to hook to where. So that's why it's called terminating.
Yeah, that's where you terminate the wires. Yeah, exactly.
I just wanted to clear that up because it might have sounded funny.
Wait, Larry, please wait. Like I said, we've got a bunch of people who haven't even said a word this evening. Let's start with Roger Smith and Humboldt. You there, Roger?
Yeah, well, I'm not actually in right now, being a new grandpa. But anyhow, I wanted to check and make sure that you got the contribution from James.
I did, and that was really neat.
He wanted some Scarlet Runner bean seeds. I put them in an envelope. I sent them. He got them. He wanted to pay me for the postage, and I just said, hey, send it to Bob.
And he did, and that was a big help.
Okay, now on the union side, unions negotiate a contract with the employer, and both the administration, hierarchy, whatever, and the union need to work to the contract. And every time there's one of these problems, it's the administration, construction company, whatever, attempting to violate a previously negotiated item in the contract. And the unions never back out of a contract. But the administration, and I'm coming from a school side, you know, public school number, the administration is always the one that wants to back out of a previously negotiated item in the contract. And that's why I'm so pro-union and screw the hierarchy.
Yeah, Roger. Yeah, I worked for the state of New Mexico, and it was non-union. And I was fired a month before my year probation was up because the new, Richardson came in as the governor. Gary Johnson was the previous governor and was anti-union. And when Bill Richardson came in, he said, now we're going to allow people to unionize. So I was actually fired and escorted off the grounds for no reason. And I found out that it was because the union came onto the campus, and I was helping put little informationals in the mailboxes of my colleagues, and I found out years later that one of the nurses that worked there told me that it was indeed because I was trying to help with the union and give information about the union to my colleagues that I got fired. So and because of that, I thought I would get some, you know, help, and I contacted SEIU there locally. And they tried to help me, but they couldn't do anything about it. But you know what they did? They hired me to work the New Mexico State Fair for a week, and I made money, and I did tabling for them. So I love unions, of course, but they did some good stuff for me, and I'm also a casualty of anti-unionism. So I'm right there with you, Roger.
Well, a similar thing happened to my mother, because my mother was working for Columbia HCA, and she was a utilization review nurse, and she was commenting about some bad work, you know, that the care was going down or the care was getting worse. Well, they started saying some, her supervisor started saying some nasty things about her, and next thing you know, they had her in the office, and they told her she couldn't work there anymore, and they escorted her out, and she had to sue. Well, you know, she may have gotten some money from it, but I'm sure that she would have preferred for the Columbia HCA group to say, hey, look, you know, we really are cutting back on our care.
Yeah, but HCA is not going to do that. Remember, this is the hospital group that was run by the Frist family. Remember former Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist of Tennessee?
Yes.
That bunch. And HCA was at one point in time, I don't know if they still are, subject to the single largest bust for Medicare fraud in the entire history of Medicare. So, they're not going to admit anything. Let's roll. We had Roger Smith. Roger in Minnesota.
Howdy.
Howdy, howdy. I just wanted to make sure that everybody gets a chance to get their licks in before we close the program at 9 p.m. Eastern, and we only got about 21 minutes to go.
Well, my recommendation to the crowd is don't get the creeping sludge that's had me in its grips for the last 4 days.
You sound like you sound a little sludgy.
I'm very sludgy.
Well, I'm a little anxious, I have to admit, because come Monday, I'm getting my I'm glad to be getting it. I'm getting my shingles vaccine. Okay. And they say that sometimes that can cause like a low grade case or whatever. I hope it doesn't. I really hope it doesn't.
Well, I'm
but I also really, really don't ever want the shingles.
You don't.
My understanding is one of the best defenses from getting shingles is to be in a environment where there are children who may have had
chicken pox. Did we lose Roger?
I think something happened to Roger.
Chicken pox virus.
Oh, there he is. I've also heard that can trigger shingles in adults. So, I'm getting my vaccine.
Yes, I think it kind of rubs both ways.
Yeah.
Apparently though, what I understand is the best thing that we should do is probably eliminate the chickenpox vaccine so that because by and large chickenpox is pretty harmless, and if
I'm not going there with you, Roger. I watched Agnes get adult onset chickenpox shortly after the birth after Ferg was born. She got it from Ferg because Ferg got chickenpox within a month of being born.
Ooh.
And she got it from him and nearly died.
Okay, well, I know it is much more serious among adults. I guess my concern is if we make it that it is not a thoroughly ubiquitous thing that practically everybody gets chickenpox, then people who do get chickenpox in adult life, if the propensity to shingles is higher, then I'm wondering if we've vaccinated ourselves into a greater problem.
We didn't vaccinate ourselves into a greater problem with polio. Or with smallpox.
I am not arguing against all vaccines at all. I am very much in favor of them. I do wonder about the chickenpox one. Anyway, I hope that it goes well for you with your vaccination to help hopefully prevent you from ever having shingles.
Yeah, I'm terrified of them because I watched my father go through it, and there were points at which he was begging to die.
Well, my mom had it, and it was just awful for her. Just awful. So I get it. Best of luck.
You can only get shingles if you've already had chickenpox?
Yeah, you can only get shingles if you, because it's the same virus. It's herpes zoster. And after chickenpox, it goes and, to use computer terminology, it terminates and stays resident inside the spinal fluid.
You're going to make me go and get it now, Bob.
Huh?
So I had chickenpox when I was about 12.
Yeah.
And I'm now 69.
Yeah.
And you're telling me I need to go get a shingles vaccine?
I would.
Yep. I'm a nurse. I will tell you.
Okay.
Yeah, you really don't. And the thing is, I'm just, they approved my vaccination because it's, they used to only approve them 60 and up. Now they approve them 50 and up, and you're in the shingles sweet spot.
Well, thanks for the good news.
I'm just a little ray of sunshine, Roger.
Oh yeah, down and down on me out here in Oregon.
But what I tell you what. All kidding aside, I'm hoping we'll get a progress report from James on those Scarlet Runner beans.
Yeah, well, he said he was going to plant them down on the coast where it's a little cooler than Seville. I kind of warned him they don't like hot weather.
I'll be honest, I'm surprised they, I mean, have they already reached him?
Oh, yeah, he sent me a note, said he got them. I'm surprised they let him through customs myself.
Yeah, but, I mean, yeah, I'm a little surprised. But knowing, a little food porn here, for a long time, I mean, you know, everybody goes, oh, French cooking, French cuisine. No, the heart of the modern gastronomy movement is in Spain. So God knows those things may start winding up on menus.
Well, I'm just really surprised. I'm just kind of wondering how, because these beans are really good up in England. And the weather in England is quite a bit different than the Mediterranean coast of Spain. So I'm going to be real interested to see how well they do in Spain, in the Mediterranean climate instead of the Northern European climate.
Right. Did Jenny ever manage to get...
Yeah, you don't have the Skype chat open, do you?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Hey! Are the cheese curds squeaky?
They were squeaky.
Yeah, that's perfect. That means they're fresh and delicious.
And wonderful. And I'll be going to my meeting tomorrow.
Anyway, I am
powerless over cheese, and my life has become unmanageable.
Cheese curds are the best.
I've had them fried up there a couple of times. And there's just, and it's not like the grainy breading that they use, you know, when you get mozzarella sticks at TGI Yuck. I mean, it's this light, airy, crispy beer batter thing. Oh, my heavenly days. Yeah.
Hey, Bob, this is Ron. Have you ever had poutine?
I have once, but I've never been to Canada, so I've sworn that I will never have poutine again until I get to Canada.
Well, Ron, I'd like to go and get a corned beef sandwich and some cheese curds or poutine.
Oh no, poutine is a part of cheese curds, or cheese curds are a part of poutine. Yeah, and thank you, by the way, Ron. Ron jumped in alongside Gerald and Carol, and so we're down to about $100 to go to match the challenges this evening. We've taken care of the have a half a show on me challenge from Diane in Kansasstan, and that leaves Tom's challenge from the Bay Area outstanding. So thank you, Ron.
A really good poutine is made from fresh-cut French fries, dark brown spicy gravy, and cheese curds. And it is wonderful.
And is there no meat involved?
None.
Okay. See, that's why I won't have them until I get to Canada.
You can get people that are bastardized it up, but...
Right, well, the attempt that I had involved, I forget if it was bacon or... There was some sort of meat on it.
Yeah, but that's like confusing tang with orange juice.
Yeah, and maybe slightly more heretical.
But there were a couple of guys from young guys from Montreal that went down to Brooklyn and opened up a small restaurant serving nothing but genuine, authentic Montreal bagels, which they had brought in every night, and poutine, and they had a lineup that was two blocks long.
And yeah, you're telling me that people in Brooklyn did not treat the importation of Montrealese bagels into the greater New York City area as an act of overt war?
Oh, no. You have to understand, Brooklyn is now yuppified. If they'd tried to open it up in Queens or the Bronx, they would have been burned out in the first week.
Anyhow, jumping back just a couple of seconds here. When you get out to California, Bob, we got a cheese factory in what's a place called Lolita, California. And you walk in there, and they actually sell at the cheese factory what they call squeaky cheese.
That's your curds.
And you buy it in little baggies, and they're just little kind of weird chunks, and
that's
you
cheese
put
curds.
It in your mouth, and you chew down on it, and it squeaks.
That's the stuff. It's
it's great.
Heaven in a little bag. Absolutely.
Yep.
I've found lately that my favorite butter these days comes from some dairy in California, and I can't remember the name of it right now, but it's no RGBH, and it's got a beautiful flavor. And it's not that far different from the price of a regular pound of butter.
Well, years ago when the co-op used to sell unhomogenized milk, I used to buy the jars, pour the cream off, make my own butter, and then drink the milk.
Oh, man.
Yum.
Oh, it was great. And a blender makes butter really quick. You just pour the cream off, put it in a thing, let it sit up, warm up quasi to room temperature for a couple hours, put it in the blender, turn the blender on, and all of a sudden you end up with sort of a white-blue thin liquid and a whole bunch of yellow stuff. Take a fork and squeeze it, and then put it in a bowl, and you got your butter for the week.
Whoa.
Hey, Roger.
Yo.
I did my first tilling on my patches where we grow stuff.
Yeah.
And my stepson comes down and goes, "Can I put some red potatoes out there?" And I said, "Just knock yourself out. Go plant it." So we had some red potatoes that were starting to grow the deals out. So we went out there and planted. So we're going to see if we can grow potatoes.
Well, I still need a kayak to get into my dirt, although I haven't been home in 2 weeks. But
it rained a little early. It rained a little bit today, but it's been dry. I looked at it, and the ground was dry. So I said, I got to till some mulch or something into it. So I started tilling some leaves and stuff into the ground.
Well, if you can till in and not make mud, then go for it.
That's what I did. I wasn't making mud. And my stepson got the lawnmower going today. We went down to the parts shop and got the right gaskets with a carburetor. The lawnmower had to survive the flood, and he got it run. It was totally submerged in the shop, and you got
it running? More power to you.
He got it running. My stepson's a mechanic.
And, you know, even here, and granted, it feels a little bit like rubbing it in to say, I tilled for the garden today in January. But, even here in Appalachia, come mid, about mid-February-ish, the people who start tomatoes and whatnot and cabbage and whatever from seed will be starting them. And that's right up there with pitchers and catchers report for me for a sure sign of spring, that spring's on the way.
Oh, I start planting my seeds in the flats in middle of February, beginning of March.
Yeah,
I'm seeding flats and putting them in the greenhouse and getting them started, and then I put them out and let them harden off and all the rest of that stuff. And I got stuff ready to put in the ground by the end of March, 1st of April.
See, potatoes and your kohlrabi family stuff, your broccoli, your Brussels sprouts, your cabbage, and your green onions and your lettuce, you can get in fairly early. But only around here, Roger, only a fool puts a tomato in before May 1st.
Oh, no, no, I don't even grow tomatoes. It's too goddamn cold in my place.
Yeah. The obsessive compulsive gardeners are always out there, and we'll have 2 or 3 weeks of beautiful weather, and then, 2 feet of snow will fall. And that's what I'm expecting out of this spring, just because of I don't think we've had 3 inches of snow this winter so far.
Yeah, we had 2 or 3 inches of rain in February, at least.
By this time last year, we'd already had a lot of snow.
Oh, yeah.
Can I say one thing, Bob?
Yeah, sure.
This is important, or I think it is. I want to call on the listeners. Come on, guys. We're in a deficit here. We need contributions.
And Alex just did. Thank you, Alex.
And that
deficit is down to only $55 now.
We can do this. Come on. We got, 7 minutes left?
Yeah.
Come on. Everybody can do it. We can do this. It'd be great to start the week off even, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. Believe
me,
it would be.
Can you all stop gloating about your lack of snow?
Oh, wait a minute. Where are you, Nick?
It's coming.
I'm up right along Lake Erie, and I don't want to hear it.
Okay,
so. Where do you live, exactly?
I live in Ashtabula, or Ohio, Andover, really, but it's in Ashtabula County, so I get all that lovely lake effect crap.
Oh.
Were you part of the big Buffalo slam at the beginning of the season?
No, we got it, but not nearly as bad as them.
Yeah,
I'll trade you some cold weather for snow.
I'm moving from the Pacific Northwest to Arizona in 10 days. I don't like snow.
Well, come on, the Pacific Northwest doesn't get all that much snow.
But I'm from New York City originally, like 15, blizzards a winter and pretty brutal. But this rain, yeah, that's pretty bad. It's pretty bad here, too, that's for sure.
But you just got to stay close to the coast, then you don't get snow.
I like to walk out in my backyard and look at snow from a distance. Now that there's no leaves on the trees back at the ranch, I can see the top of Mount Shasta. And then I walk out to the back fence, and I look to the east, and I can see Mount Lassen, and it's covered with snow. And that's how I like to see snow from
Me
a
too.
Distance.
Rub it in.
Yeah, but what are you, Sparky, at about 1,000 feet?
In Red Bluff?
Yeah. Maybe. Left.
No, we're like 300 or something. Redding's 500-something feet.
300 feet, and you're looking at Shasta at 14,000.
Well, you've driven up I-5. You can see it.
Oh, yeah. You can see it
when the snow's on it. As soon as you get out of Orland, you're driving up I-5, and there it is. I mean, it rises up out of the horizon, and it's just, and you're just going, wow.
Well, we got a road not too far from my place that you can pull off, and I can see Shasta, Lassen, and the ocean by walking across the road. You park. You walk to the east side, you see Shasta, Lassen, and the Sierra Crest. Walk to the west side, and you can look down and see the ocean.
Can you see the Trinity Alps, too?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. The Trinity Alps are really cool.
It's like a miniature Sierra.
Oh, and, I'm absolutely stoked here, because tomorrow the forecast is for a cloudless, beautiful, sunshiny day and 50 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah, we get...
60
we get,
in Hooterville all weekend.
Yeah, we get snow on Sunday, but,
We're going to be at 60s all week, and maybe next Saturday we'll hit 70 again.
And Nikki's going to throw something at us in a minute.
Gerald, tell me, shut up.
Shut up,
Sparky. It's going to be 2 degrees tonight and 40 tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, I better get used to 125 in the shade next summer. Help.
So Carol, is it bikini day
tomorrow?
Is it bikini day tomorrow, Carol, in Hooterville with those 60-degree temperatures?
I don't think you want all of Hooterville putting their own eyes out.
If you do it, I'll do it. I'll wear a bikini and sisterhood with you, Carol.
But I do know how to make those bastards turn their music down.
Wait a minute, it used to be in radio.
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you a disc jockey or a...
Talk radio.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No worries. Hey, we got to get out of here. But thanks for a wonderful, vibrant, lively Friday on the front porch to all of you, and thanks to everybody for jumping in and getting us very, very near to closing the week to the good.
Thanks, Bob.
Oh, thank you. Thank you one and all. Let's see here. I'm looking for something real quick. We're only $35 away now. Thank you, Jenny.
You're welcome.
And thanks to everybody. Look, you guys make Fridays something that I look forward to more than I looked forward to Fridays when I was a kid in school. This is just a delightful conversation. It's serious when it needs to be. It's lighthearted when we all, and there's just a sort of magic to it, and I really, really appreciate it. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. And just so you'll know, the conversation continues off air, and especially will continue, I think, hey, Sparky Malloy's a rerun tonight?
Yes, Greg told me he's going to be in later, too.
Okay, so the conversation will continue in the Horn Malloy Skype chat room. Jump on in if you want to, or jump on in if you're nervous about being on the air. There's a great group going on right now. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Sparky, of course, both in the Horn Malloy Skype chat room and in the Horn chat room. And thank you to Lottie as well. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox, who was so instrumental in getting the website back up and running. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.